Data are more than just facts and figures. They can tell a story. That's exactly what W.E.B. Du Bois was using data for in 1900, when he showcased dozens of data portraits at a World's Fair in Paris. The portraits offered a rare glimpse of African-American life post-emancipation. The idea was to change the conventional narrative about people of color at the fair, which generally portrayed them as savages who needed to be civilized by colonialism. For the first time, two UMass Amherst professors have compiled all of these images together into a book called W.E.B. Du Bois's Data Portraits, Visualizing Black America. And Radio Boston producer Paris Alston has been unpacking all these images for our newsroom and joins me now in the studio. Hey there, Paris.
Hi, Callum. How are you?
So, first of all, could you just tell us what these data portraits are? What do they look like?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, first of all, they're a set of about 60 infographics, if you will, and they were all hand-drawn by Du Bois and a group of students and alumni who he worked with to create these data portraits. And the portraits, they essentially use data to paint a picture of African-American life at the turn of the 20th century. And they show everything from property ownership and income levels to the types of jobs that African-Americans held, or how many of them were married or single.
You know, that phrase itself is striking to me, data portraits. I mean, they almost seem like they don't go together. I think of data being like an Excel spreadsheet and a portrait being
exactly a
kind of art. So so for people who haven't seen them online, and you can look at them all, by the way, on our website, wbur.org, but describe them. How do they mesh those two seemingly incongruous things?
Yeah, very well, actually. And I mean, it's like, you're completely right. It's very counterintuitive to think about, oh my God, like, how do you visualize data? But these portraits kind of put data into a work of art, and they're very vibrant and they show movement. And they're really striking because they use these meticulous hand-drawn lines that are really neat to create these abstract shapes and give it this really geometric look. And it's also a really kind of machinic look, which is interesting because the portraits are hand-drawn, but they almost look like they were produced by a computer or machine, which we know maybe a machine, but not so much a computer at that time in 1900. And this sort of seems like a nod to industrialization or modernization that was really happening at the turn of the 20th century. And that's sort of a credit to the Industrial Revolution, which really allowed a lot of cool, new, innovative things to be happening here in America and across the world. But also we can credit a lot of those achievements to slave labor and work that African Americans did in the years leading up to the Industrial Revolution. And so these portraits also use a lot of color. They use like reds and blacks and yellows and all kinds of colors to depict the color line, which is Du Bois's kind of motif symbol for the literal and figurative separation of blacks and whites in America.
I think the hand-drawn aspect really adds to it. I mean, you can see slight differences in the shading as they're colored in there.
Mm-hmm.
Paris, what was Du Bois trying to accomplish with these infographics?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Callum, one thing he really wanted to do was dispel myths about non-white people that existed at the time. And, you know, those myths were everywhere in everyday society, but they were also at fairs like the one where these images were presented. And the dominant narrative at fairs like this were, you know, presentations of people of color as savages. You know, think about living in a village or being kind of tribal or uncivilized. And this was pervasive all over the world, of course, also in America. But these images really humanized their condition and really showed that they weren't in this static state. They were moving and they were making progress in spite of the struggles that resulted from slavery and Jim Crow segregation. And we still see this today. I mean, you know, we're constantly dealing with the residual effects of racism and of all the things that we saw since 1619, when slavery really first came to America. But we're also seeing that black people in America are still moving and are still progressing in spite of all those challenges. And, you know, that's something that Whitney Battle Baptiste, who is a co-editor of the book that these images are in, she really says that they can resonate today because of those reasons.
Whether it's 1900 or whether it's 2019, people can see this information and use it in a way that Du Bois wished, I think, he could have, but never had the opportunity to.
You know, it's also kind of counterintuitive to think about data having a humanizing effect. It almost seems like it should be the opposite. But what they were doing was kind of showing bits about the daily lives of African Americans that were not well understood at the time. Can you give us some examples? I mean, what was the data looking at?
Yeah, for sure. So one of my favorite of these data portraits shows the incomes and household expenditures of African Americans. And this is African American families specifically in Atlanta, but it definitely gives some context to what African Americans all over the United States were doing then. And it breaks down kind of the class divisions within the Black community, which also, you know, speaks to the African-American community not just being a monolith. And it shows how lower income Blacks spent more on rent, whereas upper class families didn't, likely because they might have been homeowners. But it also shows that upper class African-American families had more money to spend on things like art and travel, maybe better education. And that really showed that even though they were facing racial inequality, they still aspired to be sort of aristocrats of society. And it even broke down their diet kind of and what well-to-do African-Americans would eat, such as they would have a well-balanced diet that had a lot of meats and vegetables and lots of healthy servings. It doesn't necessarily get into what lower class African-Americans would have ate, but it's really interesting to think about, they ate really well. So,
and you can see how that tells the story when you sort of have this data that collects, you know, all the nuts and bolts like that.
Yes, exactly.
So how does this fit into W.E.B. Du Bois's legacy and his other work? Is this totally of a piece of the kind of work that he's known for, or is it a little bit something different?
Yeah, well, I mean, when we think about W.E.B. Du Bois, we often think of him as a sociologist, as a philosopher, a writer, and he definitely shows off all of those talents in these data portraits, but he's really takes on more of the role of a designer. And in his work, you know, when we think about The Souls of Black Folk, which is probably his most famous work, it's a book in which he talks about the African-American experience, and he kind of describes it with this dark and shadowy tone, and African-Americans kind of living under the veil of racism and kind of bound by double consciousness, where they're always having to be aware of themselves, but also how kind of a racist society views them, and kind of code switching a little bit. That's really how he talks about it in his writing, but the images are a little bit different.
So unpack that a little bit for us. You mentioned this notion of double consciousness.
Yeah.
And then I think we more conventionally today perhaps know that as code switching. But,
yes.
But help us understand those two.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, double consciousness, if you think about code switching and people having to kind of change the way that they act depending on what context they're in. So if you're around a group of Black people, you might act different than what you might around a group of white people or anything like that. And that kind of gives you this internal conflict as a person of color because you're always trying to just fit in. You can't. Sometimes you feel like you might can't just truly be yourself. And that's kind of what Du Bois is talking about when he talks about being bound by double consciousness. And it can be sort of crippling. But these images show that it's not so crippling. It shows that you can break beyond that sort of, and that's not necessarily a narrative that was really that evident at the time, because you think about all the things that were happening with segregation and, you know, there was lynching that was coming about later in the next century and all these things that maybe were supposed to be holding Black people back, but they were moving forward in spite of all that. And that's something that Britt Russert, who's one of the professors who co-edited the book, talks about.
These seem to be images that suggest that there's a future beyond Jim Crow, in a way in which when you read The Souls of Black Folk and if you read other accounts of how Du Bois is thinking about race relations in this moment, it's a little bit harder to imagine a way out of that system.
So that sort of gives us a sense of how these infographics coexist in the rest of Du Bois's work. How do they coexist in sort of our contemporary research and understanding? I mean, these infographics are more than a century old, Paris. So what's their significance for us today?
Yeah, for sure. So when you think about it, Callum, throughout history, data has really been used oftentimes to disenfranchise Black people and reduce them to numbers, starting all the way back to when Black people were counted as three-fifths of a person when they were slaves. All the way up to now, we see a lot of times they're reduced to crime and arrest data, and we see that that redlining practices were used to keep African Americans from owning homes and getting mortgage loans. But this is trying to use data to change that narrative and tell a more progressive story. And we're seeing that happen today. There's a modern day movement called Data for Black Lives, which is made up of data scientists and mathematicians who are really trying to get data to tell stories and to tell stories about African American life and not African American death and struggle.
That's Radio Boston producer Paris Alston. Paris, thanks for sharing these images with us.
Thank you so much, Callum.
And you can see them all online at radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.